And it reminds me of the Thomas Delaney line about facing Ireland. It's like trying to open a can of beans with your bare hands. They're a nightmare to play against.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to take you through all the weekend's action from the world of women's football. We had Champions League, we had WSL, and we had some breaking news this morning as well that we're going to react to with the news that Mark Canham has stepped down from his role in the FAI. To look at that and everything else, I am joined by Scarlett Hearn and Karen Duggan. How are we after the bank holiday weekend?
Well, good. Actually, fresh for once.
That's good.
Fresh-ish.
Fresh-ish. I know there's something about having the extra part of the bank holiday where it just, I don't know, I think all bank holidays should be the Friday and the Monday just to give proper feed into the weekend. I know Friday's not technically a bank holiday, but it's what we call here in Marconi House as a company day, so we're allowed to take it. We're going to look at the football. Now, I'm going to hold my hands up and admit that I did not watch Arsenal live in the Champions League because I was too busy on the Viking Splash Tour, which I have never done before.
Priorities.
But is actually hilariously funny. Like, I did not stop laughing for the full hour I was on that boat ride. So if anyone's looking for something to do, and it was pouring rain and cold as well, not the sort of situation you would think would make for a fun time, but I did catch up on it afterwards. But before we do that, we will look at the things that are happening at home and that news that Mark Canham, the chief football officer, has left his role. Now, this is a very interesting decision from Mark Canham and the FAI in that he gave a press briefing 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, where he answered a lot of questions around his future in the FAI, because obviously he'd set out this football pathways plan. There was the plan to get more players in through academies that didn't go down all that well with clubs, who said that they weren't going to release those players to give them like extra contact hours with the FAI. And he said in his statement today that he has made the decision to leave the association and relocate back to England. It has not been an easy decision to come to, but I believe the time is right to explore new personal and professional opportunities for me and my family. I have thoroughly enjoyed my time living in Ireland and working in Irish football, and I am proud of the work that we've put in place to support its long-term development. I would like to thank the FAI board, all of my colleagues at the FAI, and everyone involved in Irish football for their support during my time with the association. I wish every person, every organisation, and everyone associated with Irish football the very best in the future. He feels like a man who has been under fire for the last couple of months, maybe even longer than that, if fair to say, Karen.
Yeah, well, I suppose since the long and arduous process of replacing Stephen Kenny and how long that took, and he kind of had to be the voice behind that. And then in more recent times, obviously the fallout with the Alan Mahan case, he really has had to step forward and address all of the controversies that have become such a regular thing for the FAI. And I don't know if I have an opinion on Mark Canham himself, because it just feels like still feels like a bit of a poison chalice. You know, we're talking about contact time and academies and stuff like that. And for the women's game, that's exactly what we want. But when it was brought about into the men's game, it's like a huge backlash there. So sometimes your thoughts are in the right place, but the execution is wrong. Sometimes the thoughts aren't as good as we expected, usually based on budget. You know, we've found that anything that's been put forward for the women's game has been hugely underwhelming. We'd imagine that is due to budget restrictions, but, you know, Mark is ultimately responsible for bringing these people in. So we had Hannah putting that one forward, and I think there wasn't a great response to the women's side of it. And obviously he's brought Carla in now, so I wonder if she'll be feeling a bit unnerved by this as well. So there's going to be quite a bit of fallout from it. as is always the case with any news that comes out of the FAI, really.
Yeah, it feels like rarely are we having these conversations in a extremely positive light. Sometimes there are positive elements that we can take out, but it can be difficult to find. Scarlett, if you were to look, Mark Canham came in around summertime 2022. In that time, we've had a World Cup on the women's side. We've had a failed qualification for the Euros. You know, he talks about leaving a long-term plan and a lasting impact on the FAI. From a women's football perspective, how can we view, I suppose, his tenure?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, it was mainly sort of Colin Healy stuff that stood out over the last while. But I think in terms of qualifying, obviously the World Cup was great, but we always speak about it. Like, did we really push on afterwards? Like, was there a conscious effort within the FAI and the higher-ups afterwards to say, right, this is an opportunity for us now? Obviously, I think the World Cup itself was great. I think the whole country got behind the girls, and that was obviously brilliant. But I think afterwards, there was a bit of a lull. I think attendance is in, like, sort of the local league, like the League of Ireland did go up for a while, but I think now we're seeing that dip again. They're probably not as high as they were following the World Cup at the second half of that 2023 season. And we're talking about academies and different things, there probably hasn't been a whole pile done to sort of leave that legacy. But there's probably a lot of things that are going around in the background that we probably don't see. I know they're probably not very vocal on things that, like, their targets, obviously, they try to set. Obviously, we talked about the women's football plan that was released a while ago, and there wasn't any really target set in stone and nothing really about how they're going to meet them. So I suppose they might be meeting internal targets and we don't know about it. But I think from the outside looking in, there hasn't been a whole pile done. And obviously he doesn't have a lot to do with the actual team itself. So we can't really blame him for not qualifying for the Euros or anything. But I think if there was more plans and more things put in place following the World Cup to sort of help with the development of the team, and I don't know, we can't spoke about budget there. Like, I think that's a big issue at the minute, even when you're talking about, we're looking at the underage systems as well. There probably isn't the money there at the minute. So, it's hard to tell really what his impact was on those results and what his impact was overall for the women's game. But I'd say that would probably come out in the future. But, probably not the greatest tenure when you're looking at it from a controversy standpoint.
Yeah, and I suppose the big question here now is probably not what he did in the past, because I think, especially on this podcast, we're probably well enough versed on it at this stage. We've talked about it long enough in terms of what the FAI have contributed or say that they're going to contribute to the game over the next while. But it's who comes in next and what they do and what they choose to prioritise as well is going to be massive, because this massive plan for the next 12 years has been put in place and there's going to have to be choices made in terms of what's prioritised out of that from someone who hasn't been there and spent the last 3 years or whatever it was building it up. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that goes. I feel bad asking this question because I feel like there was a mixed weekend of results for the two of you, but I can see Karen looking smug there, so I'll let her go first.
Wouldn't call it smug, no. we scraped a win, and that's all that matters, because we had played well in the couple of games previous and didn't come out with 3 points. So we crawled our way over the line against DLR, and that's all it was. We're happy with that, and we'll park it and we'll move on.
And Scarlett, a difficult one for you guys against Wexford.
Yeah, there's not much to say about it. Just we weren't up to the standard at all. We really, really weren't, and I don't think we have been. I don't think we played well the week prior either against Pimer. I think we started off the season strong. We had a few tough games and got through them, but it's definitely a low point now. I think we just have to sort of reflect on that. It was down to us, really. Wexford were good and we just weren't up to it at all, and especially when you're playing at home, there are the games you need to be winning, disappointing weekend.
What has been the change, do you think, over the last couple of weeks? Because you did start with a bit of a bang.
I'm not really sure. We obviously, there was a week off and the week before we played Galway, and that was our first loss. Obviously Galway are really, really strong this year and have a good team, and it was a tight loss as well. Like, it was sort of an end-to-end game for a lot of it. I think against Piemont then last week, it could have went either way. I think Karen would agree, like, both sides had a lot of chances. They probably had the more chances in the first half, and probably the flip the second. But yeah, I think the Wexford game was, I don't know, it was just sort of one of those days that no one really showed up, and I think we could all the players that were playing can sort of be able to say that they didn't show up and didn't play to our full potential at all. So yeah, I think with the All Ireland Cup starts this weekend, so it'll give a chance for teams to try new things, maybe put in new players and see what different things work. So hopefully after that, like, we'll bounce back. But
Karen's favourite competition.
Karen's weather for getting the holidays.
No, way off to Cork for the first game of that with Peeman. So, you know, a nice small trip to start it off with. No, it is good. It's good in terms of obviously the squad rotation and player rotation. I'm kind of seeing it myself. There's girls putting in a huge amount of effort, but because of the way our results have been going, we haven't been able to rotate much at all. And when we have done rotations, it's generally been due to injuries or illnesses or things like that, and that's not what you want. And there's girls there that do deserve game time, and this is a great chance for them to put their hand up, because it's one thing doing it in training, it's another thing proving it in a match, and you need to be able to prove it in a match, and this should be the opportunity for that, hopefully. I assume that a lot of teams will approach it in that way because it is such a long season. But yeah, it is in the fixtures. It's more so that I just think that, like Scarlett said, we've gone through a couple of rough patches now. We're only 5-6 games into the season, and it's already looking difficult for us to claw our way back up the league. Whereas if we had kind of the league where it goes into three rounds and you split the top and the bottom for the third round, I always thought that was a good idea. But this is in place for now, and obviously it gives you a chance to play against different opposition, which is good too.
Yeah, definitely. And it should be very interesting as well to see that little bit of rotation, because I don't think we've really seen much of it throughout the league, to be honest, with any of the teams. It's been pretty steady going for everyone, so hopefully this will be the opportunity to look at what was happening across the water. We'll start with Champions League, because that was probably the most interesting talking point in terms of the games itself. Not a great weekend, we will say, for the English sides. Arsenal just seemed to be totally incapable of taking the chances that fell to them. And then you had Chelsea, who just cannot get rid of the ghost that is Barcelona, that hangs over them. That game was particularly, you know, you're watching it when it was 2-1, kind of was like, okay, maybe Chelsea can find their way back into this somewhere. But by the end, Barcelona were just running riot. But start with the Arsenal game first, because that was the first game. Joe Montemurro coming back to the Emirates. There was a feeling, I think, going into this game that Arsenal were probably better placed than they have been in previous years to take on this Lyon side. And also with it being a home game and the fact that the Emirates generally is the sort of place that Arsenal can turn into a bit of a cauldron of support for them. But Lyon just showed their absolute class when it comes to being European champions as many times as they have. That their front, like their forwards, were just absolutely insane in terms of their ability, and Arsenal just looked really unconfident in the whole thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it seems a silly thing to say. I don't know where they maybe I was a bit surprised by Lyon's work rate. You know, you talk about their talent and their attacking talent and stuff like that. De Morney in particular, so powerful for them. But Agarola in midfield, Horan, or Heaps as she is now, they got through so much work, and they really did make it hard for Arsenal. Arsenal had moments, particularly through Caldente. You know, she's the type of player who can kind of play that ball through an eye of a needle. Endler made a great save from her. That was really, really important.
The woodwork as well made a few saves.
You know, having Zinsberger back in goal for Arsenal. I think 2-1 was probably a fair result on the balance of things. I thought Lyon, you know, away from home, really, really showed up. The penalty for me that Arsenal got is a talking point, I would say.
In that you don't think it should have been a penalty?
I mean, I understand that she made contact with Williamson, but Williamson didn't make contact with the ball. So Williamson was never the player in control of the ball. The ball was gone past her when contact was made. So Williamson wasn't really affecting that phase of play at all. And it was, you know, both players going for the ball. And yes, the contact was made, that's because a goalkeeper is allowed to use her fist. Williamson didn't at any point claim it. So she was, I'd say, as surprised as anyone. But it makes it really exciting going into the second leg. Sometimes you think Arsenal almost play better when they're the underdog. I don't know. Do they carry the weight of being favourites very well?
And now that they have to come from behind. And follow.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a thing, and it's something that if they want to become dominant in Europe, they're going to have to shake. But it is going to be a really, really interesting second leg.
Scarlett, what were your thoughts? You were nodding and then looking suspiciously, like you had other thoughts to some of the things that Karen was saying there.
No, I thought Arsenal did quite well. I think they probably caused themselves their own problems, sort of giving the ball away while playing out. Leon kind of sat off them a little bit, sort of in like a mid-block, kind of let them play. And they just coughed up chances through trying to play slip balls into midfield and getting caught out and different things like that. But I just think it was kind of all down to them. Like, the amount of heading chances Freedom Adam had was unbelievable. And I think one of them goes in, it kind of changes the tie. But I think that they did put it up Leon, to be fair. But I think that home fixture is important now for Leon to really go in there with the lead is really, really positive for them. I do think the penalty was iffy as well. It's one of them where it goes to VAR and everyone's kind of like, what's that for? No one really knows what the issue was, but I think it fell nicely for Arsenal. And then to concede so soon after, obviously, Dumoulin is such a strong player and she kind of just breezed through the defence then, like, two or three minutes later. And if that's Arsenal, like, and you're under the cosh, you have to just lock up shop for the next 5 minutes. You know, that's like a simple element of football is when you score, when you concede, right, let's lock up for 5 minutes. Let's not let anything easy come in. Try to steady the ship, and they weren't able to do that. And Leon took full advantage of them, and yeah, we're probably worthy of the win. But I think Arsenal were unlucky, created a lot of chances, and I think it'll be a really, really exciting second leg now.
Well, definitely more exciting, you would think, compared to what Chelsea and Barcelona served up. I mean, in that we'll probably or potentially see another Barcelona masterclass, but I think, you know, what that scoreline ended up as, that's not the Chelsea that we have seen all season, but it's the same Chelsea that keeps turning up at the same stage of the Champions League against Barcelona year after year. And I think you probably would have thought, with it being Sonia Bompaster in there, that, you know, she's been to the top levels of the game with Lyon. She's done it as a player and a manager. You had Lucy Bronze in there, who's won European titles more than any other English player, male or female, that there was that little bit of extra, I suppose, knowledge in there that maybe Chelsea have been missing over the last couple of seasons, but they just seem to kind of fall apart after that third goal.
Yeah, I thought Barcelona, just from the bits I saw, were in total control, which we're not used to seeing. And Chelsea, you know, they looked a bit stuck in the mud at times. It was like, it was the likes of Millie Bright, I think, for, I don't know if it was the first goal. And they win the initial header and she's ball watching, and just instead of going to the striker, that's a very basic thing for someone of her ability to forget to do, you know, to follow the striker, who's the only threat, you know, ball watching and stuff like that. And they looked overawed, which is kind of embarrassing for someone of Chelsea's pedigree. They shouldn't be overawed by Barcelona. They should have seen this as the opportunity.
Two record signings this season alone. You know, there's plenty of experience in that squad.
Yeah, I was very, very shocked. You know, obviously not because Barcelona are unbelievable, not by how Barcelona managed the game or anything like that. But like you say, I think that with Chelsea's pedigree and this being, and almost having the WSL wrapped up, this being the sole focus pretty much for the last couple of seasons with them, to allow something like this to happen to them at this stage again, it was very, very surprising. Just because they've got a lot of experience in there as well. A lot of people who are leaders, you know, Bright, Cuthbert, you know, Ramirez should have been tormenting Barcelona, but they didn't get the ball up to her enough. You know, all the peppering was happening, and only for Hannah Hampton it would have been worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of a scary thing.
But no one even mentions that save either in the context of talking about this game. It's almost forgotten about that it very easily could have been 5-1.
and it's almost game over anyway. And, you know, you're looking at Ciara Walsh, who, you know, we laud as one of those midfielders who can control a game, and she was anonymous. And you're kind of thinking, why? Why is this happening again?
Yeah, because you would think that, especially with someone like Walsh, obviously Barcelona are going to know her inside out, but that's where you hope that Bompaster comes in with some different way of playing her, some little tactical formation or change that makes her or allows her to be the unstoppable player that we know her to be. Scarlett, you look at the Claudia Pina goal. I think there were, like, what a team goal that was. I think there was something like 18 touches from in the lead up to it. It was everyone involved. It was the sort of fluid play that you would expect from this Chelsea team. But then, as Karen was saying there, we, despite the experience, despite the fact this is only the second game they've lost all season, they just looked at odds. And there's enough new players in that squad that you would say they don't have the ghosts of Champions League past, but yet it still seems to be hanging on them.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, it sums up the sort of game that, like, Chelsea just stood off them and kind of crumbled, like, especially after when they get the goal back against them on a play, and you're thinking, right, okay, 2-1 here is not actually a bad result, bring it back to a home fixture in the second leg, and then they just completely crumble. Yeah, and like it was just really, really disappointing from them, because it is a team that like that sort of thrives in big games like that, and that we have seen being in and out of form over the last few weeks. But you really think in a fixture like this that a lot of those leaders and big players would stand up, because it is ultimately the biggest game of their year. I know they're going to run away with the league, but this is, as you said, the ghost of the Champions League. Like, it's something they haven't been able to do before, and it's something that a lot of those players in that squad have done. Talk about Lucy Bronze, and like, they just crumbled completely, and they didn't get anywhere near them at any stage. And it's that old sort of saying in the men's game, it was boys against men, like it was girls against women, you know. They could not get near them at all, and to sort of have that performance on such a big stage is very concerning, and it's sort of something that we wouldn't expect from that Chelsea side. And especially, you think Bombaster comes in, they change their style, and you think that she'd have the experience of playing Barcelona in previous years to know what they're about as well. And I don't know if it was just a tactical thing. I think it was a mental thing more so, because they just could not get near them at any stage. And it's kind of, you wonder, is it just the idea in the back of their head that we can't beat these lot, we've tried over the last years and we just can't beat them? And it's the same again, and I think it'll take a miracle really to go back and overturn this, especially against a team that is so defensively sound as well.
Well, I was going to ask that, is there any hope? Because next, return legs in Stamford Bridge, it's not really the sort of place that Chelsea have ever made a home for themselves, I would say, in the same way that Arsenal have at the Emirates, in that they sometimes still look a little bit uncomfortable on the bigger pitch. You know, having to score 3 goals with no answer, well, minimum 3 goals with no answer from Barcelona, and with how they played at the weekend, it does seem very unlikely, Karen, that they can come back from this.
Yeah, it does, because I don't think, even if Chelsea dominate the game, I don't think they're going to dominate it in the way that Barcelona did, like a 64% possession. Barcelona are too good on the ball to give Chelsea the ball long enough, I think, to create enough chances to score 3 goals unreturned. So I think Barcelona have the experience, the confidence and the ability to see it out now, even if it's with the 2-0 loss. You know, I don't think that at any time they're going to panic. You know, we were kind of looking at the men's game last week, and everyone was expecting Real Madrid to come at Arsenal and do what needed to be done. But Arsenal they banked up and absorbed the pressure. And Barcelona, I'm sure it's not their style of play, but if it goes to a point where it's 1-0 down, 2-0 down, and that's what they need to do, they still have the opportunity to do that and change tactics throughout the match, because that gap is so wide. And I think Chelsea would be so disappointed with that. I think Scarlett's right. If you score in the 74th minute, calm things down when you've been dominated by that much. Just fall back, do whatever you can to try and see it out to the 98th minute and come back with a 1-0, 1-goal deficit. But to come back with 3, a goal on the 82nd minute, even then you say, okay, 2 goals. But to concede in the 90th minute as well, it's so, so disappointing.
Yeah, it's not a level of mentality we're used to seeing from this Chelsea side, except when they play Barcelona in the Champions League, and then we see it quite regularly. To look quickly at some of the WSL games, a disappointing draw, you would say, Karen, for Manchester United against West Ham, whose home form is actually very impressive the last couple of games. They've kind of, they're starting to find a little bit of grip, I would say, in terms of who the team is. And United were unlucky with those Celine Bizet attempts that hit the woodwork twice. But in terms of the Champions League cementing United as one of the big three or four, not the best result.
No, I was kind of panicked looking at the minutes ticking by. Only that Man City did Man United another favour this week. I would be really, really sweating over that, given that Man United now have to go into games where, you know, they're playing Chelsea, Arsenal, City. That's their last three games. Yeah, not a good place to be. You know, they're still 7 points ahead. So obviously it's basically going to come down to that head-to-head against Man City, really, that they get a result in that. That's kind of going to dictate what happens. But United played some good stuff. Again, they were solid enough defensively, but equally West Ham stood up to a test. So I think that mentally they've gotten better. I think they've gotten more cohesive as a team. And I think they do now have a threat on the break, which Man United had to be conscious of. So while Man United kind of dominated possession, I think they were limited apart from those Bizet chances. And they weren't as clinical as they have been. Turland, we've kind of seen her pick up a few goals. So she was in the right places, but her execution wasn't as good as previous weeks. So you'd have to give credit to West Ham for standing up in that game, and hopefully it doesn't unnerve United. I think it would have been worse, obviously, if Man City had gotten the win against Everton, which we all expected.
Yeah, I think that Man City Everton game is kind of interesting in terms of the place that the two teams are at. So, you know, United are fairly comfortable above them. There's 7 points there, realistically. Hopefully they will be able to hold on.
Yeah.
City are missing a ridiculous amount of players at the moment in terms of injuries. They had that big one to Mary Fowler during the week, and then there was also Vivian Miedema during the international break as well, losing out Scarlett. You know, if you're there and you're Nick Cushing and you're trying to motivate this team over the next three rounds of fixtures, I think their run-in is Leicester, which you imagine they should be able to do. That United game, as Karen mentioned, and then Crystal Palace on the final day. There should be enough there to motivate this Manchester City team in terms of what United's run-in is, but also they just feel a little bit at sea.
Yeah, and I think, especially considering the fact that United played the day before and City went into that game knowing what they had to do and knowing that they could really put pressure on United, and then really just failing to put any chances away and to draw. I know Everton have been a bit better, but they're the games you need to be winning, especially at home. And you look at the fixtures now, they are in City's favour, and that derby is going to be the big one. It's 6-pointer, like City on paper should win those other two games, and you think that United would probably drop points against Chelsea and could drop points against Arsenal as well, and then it's all down to that last game against United. So if you're City, you're thinking this is an opportunity for us now to make back what we've lost this year, and they obviously haven't had a good year by any of their standards, but this is a chance now to sort of make amends and to fix things for next year, because I think if that team going a year for European football, if you're a club like Man City, who obviously put the money into it, they have the funds for it, and to fall short of that is definitely a very disappointing year. And it's even not to be competing for the league is probably disappointing by their standards. But if you're missing out on European football, that's more money lost. Like, that's more players that aren't going to want to come in, and that's players that might want to leave now to go to a team, because all those players are the world class. Like, you're going to want to be playing Champions League football every season, and to even miss out on the qualification rounds, like, even look at Arsenal missing out last year, and at least they got nearly to qualification, to not even have that opportunity for a team like City is I know they've had a rough year, but it's embarrassing. Like, you know, it's really not good enough for the club that they are. And they should be really looking at that Everton game and thinking, like, we need to be picking up 3 points there to put the pressure on. I do think they still have a chance, but as I said, it's all going to come down to that derby. And I think I think United sort of have that confidence at the minute. I think they're like against that game the weekend, they had a lot of chances and probably should have put them away. I know Skinner came out after and saying that's a 3 points loss, like, you know. So I think they have the mojo and the momentum at the minute to go and win that game at City and to maybe pick up some points in either of the other three games. But yeah, if you're City, I think you're disappointed either way, but they have a chance still, but I don't think they'll do it.
I think if they don't get Champions League, there'll be a lot of question about the management of everything, because you can say they're unfortunate with injuries, but they allowed Chloe Kelly to go on loan. So there's obviously going to be queries around the squad management and everything that goes with that. Obviously, there's a new management team in place, and maybe that settles any dressing room unrest that might have been there. But yeah, it's kind of a ropey time for them to see if they come through this.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I know we didn't have a team of the week this week, Scarlett, but would it have been the first time that we ever got a set of twins on the team of the week, with the home guard twins doubling up to get that goal for Everton?
Yeah, probably would have been, and wouldn't mind it. They could have got a double as well a while later. I know, just put it wide, but yeah, it was a pretty cool stat, isn't it? I know that Karen? Is that the other twin? That was her first start since last year. So obviously that's great. Like, it's one of those nice moments that you probably haven't seen that much of, and you probably don't see in the men's game either. So that's a cool moment for them.
Yeah, definitely a rare enough one. And we have to give a shout out to one of our own, Leanne Kiernan, on the score sheet for Liverpool, which we always like to see. Disappointment for Brighton once again. They just really struggled to get any sort of consistency into their game. But considering there was a little bit of fear over Leanne and injuries as of late, very nice to see her back on the scoreboard ahead of those internationals coming up.
Yeah, she's just a confidence player. It's what we've always said. But I think the Liverpool system kind of suits her a little bit more. You know, they play very well on the break, especially with Smith keeping the width. Leanne had a lot of space to move in those central areas. So I think that the formation and the way that they can break quickly and everyone knows their role suits Leanne. So it'll be interesting to see how she's deployed for Ireland. But Brighton, yeah, they just walked themselves into trouble and gifted Leanne that second goal. You know, there was calls for offside, but I think if you're making those kind of mistakes, you deserve to be punished for them, which is unfortunate for Brighton, because I do think they've kind of accumulated a very good squad now, and it's something they could potentially kick on from. Just go back to Everton though, I didn't read where Courtney Brosnan was. Do we have any update on that?
I was trying to find,
she's on the bench.
Yeah, I was trying to find some information about that before coming on, and there doesn't seem to be anything. I was checking if any of the reporters had asked it afterwards, but there didn't seem to be anything.
If there's no story behind it in terms of injury or illness or anything like that, it is a very strange move for a manager to change one of your standout players. Obviously, you know, Ramsey's a great keeper herself, but do we wonder if it's because we're coming towards the end of the season? Do I start causing controversy now and say, is she looking elsewhere? Is that why he's trying to change things up?
Yeah, but surely if she is. This is a bit like that time Emma Byrne started Arsenal transfer rumours on the podcast purely just by musing about something. I feel like, though, if Courtney is looking elsewhere, surely that's a time to like row in behind her and like kind of show, this is why you're so important to us, rather than be like, oh, we could do fine without you, you know. We'll manage.
Unless it's decision made.
Yeah, that's true.
There's probably absolutely nothing to this story. It's probably just squad rotation or injury that we don't know about.
I mean, we've like always, I think, said on this podcast that we would love to see her playing with a team that are kind of competing a bit higher up the table than Everton. Obviously, she has become so important for them and has kept them in it many a time. But it will be interesting to see. We'll keep an ear to the ground on that one, Karen, and maybe update people on it over the next little while. Scarlett, just quickly on Spurs, you look at where they are this season compared to last season. You know, they were in an FA Cup final. They were being a bit Spursy about things, but not completely. Now, second half of the table, they haven't scored since like January, early February, I think. It's been a long time. And they're just really struggling. I think they've also conceded more goals than anyone else bar like Palace. They're just really struggling on all fronts. And it will be interesting because there's a change up in the leadership at Spurs. And Vinay, who's coming in, who used to be with Arsenal, was a massive supporter of the Arsenal women's side whenever he was there. And now he's gone to Spurs, which is controversial in a North London context. But there's a potential there for there to be a brighter future, but for the right here, right now, Spurs are Spursing.
Spurs are Spursing at every level, at every code, men and women. Yeah, no, it hasn't been a good year to be at the Tottenham Hotspur grounds at all, but but Villa have been so, so poor, and to sort of come away with a win there, like, if you're Spurs, you're thinking, no, this is the pits of it. No, but even when you bring two goals back, like to go 2-0 down is bad enough, then to bring it back and lose is even worse. And I think we've seen Hansen come off the bench for Villa before and make a difference, and she did it again. And it was all down to Spurs really getting the ball up, had the pitch and just getting broken on the counter and just so disconnected. I mean, she had buckets of space to run into, and she was just the halfway line skipping through defenders and they were so disconnected throughout the game for most of the goals as well. Just really, really disappointing. And if you're like, they had positives as well, like down the left flank they were causing a lot of problems with Naz played very well, but they're just, I don't know, they're lacking a bit of character as well. I think if they've kind of lost their sort of who they are, and they don't really have that bit of bite about them anymore. So I think that's something they're probably going to look at. But yeah, both teams with this point in seasons, and they'll come out the best thing, to be fair. And a pattern on the score sheet as well, from an Irish perspective. It's good to see.
Yep, also very good to see. Guys, thank you very much. That's all we have time for today. I forgot to mention this at the start of the show, but this is actually our 150th episode of the Koi Gig podcast. So another nice little milestone. Verona, who's very kindly producing this for us today, is doing a little dance in the background. So that's the sort of thing that we like, the support we like to see. But thank you everyone for listening over the last couple of years and getting us to 150 podcasts. Don't think Karen and I thought we would still be sitting here.
No.
That far down
definitely
the line.
Definitely not.
150 hours together, Karen, that's exactly what
still
we like.
For that bar of chocolate.
Yeah. And Scarlett, of course, great to have you on board for this. We have a very special episode coming up next week, which actually felt very nicely to commemorate this 150. So keep an eye on the Koi Gig social channels as we will be teasing that closer to next week. But for now, thank you very much for listening. The Koi Gig pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. I hope the All-Ireland Cup goes well for you guys at the weekend, and that Arsenal are potentially in past another Champions League stage, but that's probably unlikely enough. But we will chat to you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.